Hello, and welcome again to Movies With. I'm so pleased to welcome today a greatly accomplished, self-made actress, the It Girl that starred in so many iconic movies of the 1980s and 90s, including Carrie, Dress to Kill, Blowout, all the RoboCop films, and so many more. She has gone on to do wonderful, magical, life-changing work, which we will discuss. Please welcome Nancy Allen.
Wow. Thank you. What a lovely introduction. I hope I live up to that.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
You did the minute you walked in.
Exactly. The minute you said hello. How about that one?
So, Nancy, we were just talking about the cinema and how important it is to watch movies. Can you tell us a little bit about the first time you went to the movie theater and share with us, what was that experience like? And if you recall the first film you watched?
I don't recall the very first film that I watched, but I will tell you that going to movies and watching movies is a big part of my childhood, maybe the biggest. I grew up in the Bronx and the Lowe's Paradise, which had stars on the ceiling. And it was just this magnificent palace, movie palace. And I remember seeing a movie and I couldn't tell you what it was, but the child was kidnapped. I remember that portion of it. A little bit later, I remember standing online. I was about 10 with my parents to see a movie, and the movie began. I actually think back that they probably had no idea. It was Psycho.
Wait, at 10 years old, you saw Psycho.
I can tell you that had a huge effect on my life. I mean, I was already a scared little creature, but that really did me in. But the thing about the movies is that in those days, you would go, it was an entire day experience. You'd go in, be people there, get dark.
Yes.
There'd be newsreels, and then there'd be the B film, and then the A. I mean, you were there all day long, and it was really magical for me.
Did you have any favorite movies when you were a little kid that maybe inspired you to want to go into movies?
Well, you know, I wanted to be a dancer to begin with, so I loved Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers movies and, you know, musicals. I really enjoyed them, but I don't know, maybe I was just kind of a weird little kid. I really liked film noir. I mean, I remember, you know, Double Indemnity and Mildred Pierce and, you know, The Postman. I mean, I really loved that genre and was transfixed by it. And so... I don't know. I couldn't say any one real movie changed my life, but I had a difficult childhood. I mean, it was a really loved my family, loved my parents, and was definitely a loved child, but it was a really kind of a wild and crazy household. And so being the youngest, I mean, I just escaped really in fantasy, imagination, fantasy. And I'd watch these movies over and over and over again. And, you know, and then go in my room and create stories with dolls and go to school and, you know, find my friends at lunch and not play jump rope and say, okay, you be this and you be this and I'll be that. And then, you know, just sort of, I guess I didn't
you
know
You were
the
fun.
Word.
You were the fun kid but in the playground then.
Yeah, but I was also the shy kid. So it's kind of weird. I mean, I'm just a walking contradiction, I think, in a strange way.
But do you think through your shyness, when you act, you portray something within you that you're allowed to come out because you're shy maybe, or you when you were shy, you weren't able to bring that out?
Well, I think that's it. And I think the reality is it's much easier to be someone else than yourself, you know, and that's the magic of the soundstage. You know, we're in a lot of places that I felt comfortable in my life, but I remember walking onto a soundstage the first time and go, just it's like that same feeling that I got in movie theaters, like, oh, I feel at home here.
How did we go from 10-year-old Nancy in the movie theater to Nancy Allen? Yeah. What was that journey for you?
A very weird journey. So I started out to be a dancer. I went to performing arts high school, the Thame school, and I was a dance major, and I wasn't asked back. Imagine that. And I held that secret all summer long. I thought, oh my God. And then I told my parents, I said, you know, I really don't want to go back to that school. And my father hated my going there because it's a public school. He says, see, Flo, I told you, those public schools are terrible. So I ended up in this tiny little four-classroom school called Quintana's School for Young Professionals on 56th Street, right across the street from the Carnegie Hall Rehearsal Studios where I studied dancing. Many of the kids that were there were acting in, you know, music, and they were already professionals. And a friend of mine said, oh, my mother would love you. You would be great for commercials. And I said, oh, do they pay you for that? She said, they do. And so I went to meet her mother, and she signed me right up. And I was 15 and a half, I think, at the time. Well, I just started, she said, go here and leave your picture. So I started wandering around, leaving my pictures everywhere at all these agencies. And I was going on auditions. If they gave me a piece of paper with words on it, I'd say, could you excuse me? I'm just going to the restroom. And I would leave because I was afraid to read the lines. So I got caught doing that. And then, then I started studying actually with an acting coach, not a class. I was too shy to go into a class, but it was really good because we did a lot of cold readings, and she worked on my voice and diction. And I mean, I didn't know I had a New York accent. Didn't sound strange to me, but apparently I did. So little by little, I started going on theater auditions, and then came The Last Detail, many years later.
Did you do any theater in the interim? Was there any of that? Or
no, I didn't.
You went right into movies.
No, and you would. Well, the thing is, I was doing commercials, which was a great training ground. Yeah. You learned working with cameras and hitting marks and repeating things and trying things and working with directors. It was a different formula. You would think a New York actress would be on stage, right. And that was not my path. So at some point I thought, after I did The Last Detail, my tiny little part in that, which was really...
There was some of Jack Nicholson was...
Yeah. Yeah, Jack Nicholson. They actually offered me the part opposite Randy Wade as the hooker. Mm. I called my agent. I can't do this. And he said, well, Lynn Stallmaster wants to talk to you. So I got on the phone with Lynn Stallmaster, who our paths would cross later again in my life. But I said, Lynn, I just can't. I just don't think I could be naked and speaking at the same time. It's like maybe one or the other. Anyway, so then they called me and said, they'd really like you to do something in the movie. So I ended up with that little part in The Party opposite Jack Nicholson. What's wrong with that?
And that was a good showpiece for you, right? Did that lead to other work from that?
It really didn't. Mm. And what it did was it set a fire under me, because I thought when I was on that set, it was so different than shooting a television commercial. Mm. I mean, first of all, you couldn't even hear the camera turn on. It was like there was such a
silence.
I loved it. I was excited about it. And I didn't tell anyone because I thought, what if I'm horrible in this movie, I sat with it for probably 2 years. And then one morning I woke up and I went, I've sold everything I can sell. If I don't go to California right now, I'll never go. And I was 25 then. So that's
25.
Yeah. So that's what sort of got me out
here. That's a big move to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're so excited to ask that question. And when you made that change, like, did that come from within you, or was someone encouraging you to go? Like, who was it? Was you?
No encouragement. In fact, I found, like, what are you doing? How many people do you think want to do this? What makes you think, oh my God, you don't even know anyone? What are you? No, I just had to go. I had to. It was a pull, really a pull inside of me to go.
Did you have mentors though? Did when you came out to LA, was anybody, or were you just kind of Nancy coming here and
Nancy coming here with a few phone numbers and of agents, and and there were five, and I thought, well, I'm going to call the woman.
Yeah,
call her first.
Safe to save.
And it was Joan Scott. She was a legendary agent at the time, and she had gotten my picture, and I was 25. I looked maybe 17. But she said to me, now, how old are you? And I said, oh, I'm 25. And she said, well, you're too old and you need to go back to New York.
She said that.
You're too old. If you were a man, I would consider it. But as a woman, you would not be worth the time of my investment. And I went, okay. Wow. Well, that really encouraged me. That's kind of where I come from. I'll show you.
Exactly. You know? That lets fire under your belly, right? In your belly, wanting to prove her wrong.
Oh, totally. The same with my father. It's like, oh, really? I'll show you.
And what was her reason? Because
I was a woman and I was too old.
It's like 5 more years and then.
You can't make any money from a woman off of a woman. And that was kind of it. That's what I
take away. That was how the industry was.
Well, that's what she said. And I just said, well, fine. You know, I'll show you.
Let me ask you a question. So when you were younger, you were shy. It took a lot of courage to up sticks and move to the other side of the country. More on your own, one on your own, two, to then go and talk in front of people that are most likely going to shoot you down because that's what they do. But you did it. Now, that took a lot of courage. How did you find that transition from being maybe a shy girl to someone that said, no, I'll show you who's going to do this, and it's going to be me?
I don't know that I can fully explain it. I just know that it's that intuitive. It's that quiet little voice. It's that intuitive. It's like, go. Just something that really felt like I knew I needed to leave New York. I knew I needed to come out here. That's how it felt. I don't know. It's like walking through. It's like walking around, dropping my pictures off. Just that pull of, I have to go in this direction. So, that probably relieved the fear momentarily.
And so do you still hear that voice? Is it still is that something that's been through your life? It's almost like a voice saying, keep trying, keep doing that.
I think it's the voice, and you know, the older you get, there's a lot of noise, a lot more noise around you. I had to start studying meditation and things like that to get to that, because there's a lot of other voices in your head that are telling you this and that and all that stuff. But it's the one that's just, that you really have to listen to, and maybe the one that you're going like, oh, I don't know, should I? You know, that it's that magic of knowing, but the little bit of fear. It also comes with a role that way. And you'll read something, oh, I really want to do that. And, oh, I don't know, can I? That's the role I want to play.
Because when you went to do RoboCop, that was so different from anything you'd done before. So was that something in your head? Because you've done a number of movies with Brian and other movies too. And then this movie comes up. Now, how did you hear about RoboCop and what made you go for it? What was the...
I was sitting in my apartment and I got a call and they said, the script is coming. In those days they sent them, they didn't come on your computer. Script is coming and take a look at it and they'd like to meet with you. So the script came and I pulled it out and went, oh, RoboCop. I called and I said, that's a horrible title. They're going to change that, right? That's just so sleazy. Anyhow, I thought, well, I said, I'll read a little bit. So I thought, I'll sit down and read a little bit of it. I read the first page and I couldn't stop. It was such a brilliantly written script. I'd never read anything like it before. So it was so revolutionary and new and smart and funny and had so much soul to it. And I just thought, as we were talking earlier, my father was a cop. I thought, I know her. I know this girl. I have to play this part. I have to play this part. So I went to meet, there's an audition with, who's there? Paul Verhoeven and John Davison and the writers and Sally Dennison, who had cast me in another film earlier. It was sort of futuristically the way it was described in the script, but for some reason I wanted to play down my sexuality. So I went in khakis and a white shirt and just kind of really dressed down and read a couple of scenes. And then Verhoeven, who I adore, says, you know, this scene, I want you to do blah, 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 blah. And I said, oh, can I take a minute? He says, oh, go, go. And I went out and I sat down and I sat with it. Came back in and he read with me. Didn't have like any. So he read with me and I read it. I said, is that what you wanted? He says, not at all, but it was very interesting.
I love it.
So that was kind of fun. And then I didn't get the part. Ugh. And I said, no, that is so wrong.
Oh, no.
There must be a mistake. They cast somebody else. I said, no, this is my part. I know this is my part. And then this gal couldn't do it. And it kind of went like that with my role and Peter's role. And then they ended up with the two of us, which I think worked out well for the movie.
Actually, Peter played a really good part in that. He was very straight-laced. He was very robotic in his acting, which is obviously for the part. But it came across really, really well. I
mean, yes.
I remember seeing that film when it came out in the 80s, didn't it? So 86, 87. Yeah,
87, I think.
Early 20s. No, I wasn't even. I was a little bit younger. But great, amazing film. And in fact, for you to work in a franchise for a film, so 1, 2, and 3, must have been amazing for you.
Well,
if you love the part,
the concept is amazing. The doing was not amazing.
No?
The first was amazing
because
it was an new, extraordinary set. It was quite low budget, by the way, for a film like that. I think it was like $11 million or something. And they said, you can have a great suit or you can have a great set. And Verhoeven chose the suit. We were paid very little and there was a little bit of a back end. But everybody was there because they loved the script. And so when the sequel came, John Davison approached me and he sent me a script and it was fabulous and I loved it. And I said, okay. But then that script went away as with that director, and then came along Irvin Kershner, who changed everything. And it was just really the worst experience of my career, to tell you the truth. I have recovered since then. And, I mean, this is awful to say, but I was interviewed a few years ago and they said, well, you know, Irvin Kershner died. And I said, not soon enough. I mean,
rude or what?
Oh, he was mean. He was really? So mean. Yeah, he didn't like me and it showed, you know. But, and by the third one, really, the reason I did the third one, to be honest with you, is I had so much interest from the women who had written to me, young girls who had written to me, who loved Ann Lewis. And I thought, you know, I've got to finish this.
And I'm glad you did, because as a woman, you played such a strong character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as women, we look for that. And that was very transformative for a lot of women. We feel it was you standing there, you representing that, yes, you can be a badass and you could be great at it, right?
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you, what goes through your mind? Because when you talked a little bit about feeling the silence, and I feel like it sounds like you take things in and then you use whatever feeling you have to make decisions. So how did you decide? Walk us through a little bit of your decision, or how did you make a decision on taking certain roles? What was it about? Was it the story? Was it the cast? Like, what were the things that were very important for you to say yes to this project? And no to that one.
Well, the very first is always a script.
Okay.
A script that you can actually get through. You know what I mean? That's a good start. A character that I find relatable in some way or want to explore, maybe it's a side of me that is, you know, we're so complex. You know, we present this much of ourselves. And there's all this world going on in here. So it's a great opportunity to explore. I find people fascinating. I love true crime, and it's because I'm always interested, like, what's going on? What makes them, makes somebody do something?
Yes.
And that kind of exploration. Now, I will say that, you know, when I started, the roles for women, for the most part, were really just there to help facilitate the story.
Yeah.
It really wasn't a woman's story for the most part, certainly not the roles that I played or had the opportunity to play. So it really was about, where's a story that I want to tell? Where's something that I can I add something to this? Will they let me add something to this woman to make her a little bit more? I was very fortunate, very fortunate. I look back now, someone said to me, oh, you were in the 70s in the middle of everything. And I thought, I really was.
You were.
I mean, I really was in the middle of all these young, amazing directors. Mm-hmm. And it was like film school for me, you know, listening to them. They're talking about movies. Oh, that's something I like, listening to that. So, you know, there were roles that I might have wanted that I didn't get. But I love the young girls today, the actresses, women, I guess. Of an age, they're still, we're all still girls, but the fact that they immediately start their own production companies, they start developing material that they want to do. And I just look at that and I think, you go, girls, you know, it makes me so happy. And I did.
Self-empowerment.
Well, you own it. You own it. It's like, the story isn't out there. Well, let me write it.
Yes, let me develop it. And I actually developed my very own film noir based on a book called Getting Away with Murder that I read a long time ago. And that was really a fun experience. I mean, because you could really explore the whole story and all the characters, really, what's going on with all of them. So I don't know that I had that many choices.
Okay.
So it was like, what's the best of what's here in front of me? And that's kind of how it went. And it's interestingly enough, some of the things that I read for that I didn't get that I really wanted to do, I can't even remember what they were. And I don't even know if those movies, who knows, you know? So,
because you just moved on. Gotta go to the next thing.
You move on. And, you know, listen, I, have worked with so many incredible leading men and directors and movies that have lived on way longer than I could have imagined. So at the end of the day, I ended up, I guess, where I was supposed to be. I mean, that's kind of life, isn't it?
Yeah. I think we all do. But there's people who inspire us. Can you share a little bit of the, you know, maybe some of the folks that inspired or helped you through your journey?
Well, I don't know. I would say that my mother, I hate to say it sounds so corny, but it was really a great inspiration to me because she was of the belief you can do anything you want.
You can want that anything. Way.
And that's she, now, on the other hand, you have the father going, no, you can't. So it's like, my sister, my, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, she really inspired me and encouraged me greatly. I would say later, probably, for the time that we were together, my first husband, Brian De Palma, was a great inspiration to me and great, really encouraging. Because I think as I got older, I came to doubt a lot of you just start questioning, at least I did, about my value, my talent, and all of that. And he was always, you know, very encouraging. I remember, I remember many, many, many years later when my career, I was older, probably in my way older, in my 40s. And, you know, I'm thinking, wow, what's going on? And I was seeing a therapist and I said, I don't know, maybe that whole career of mine was just a mistake and maybe it just happened. And so she had me do this exercise where I wrote down like everything I'd done and who I had worked with, all the different directors. And she said, maybe they felt sorry for me. And she said, in Hollywood, they're going to hire you and ruin their movie because they feel sorry for you, you know. So I don't know. I mean, people that I watch, great performances. I always loved Jane Fonda. She was a big inspiration of mine as an actress. I thought she was really amazing. Maggie Smith. I don't know.
Can I ask you a question? Mm-hmm. So these are people that inspired you. What would you say if you want to inspire someone else coming into the industry or someone that is on the early stage or early starting out in the industry? What would you say to them to inspire?
Well, I mean, I think it's take risks, trust your intuition. Every time I didn't trust my intuition, it was like, you knew, why didn't you pay attention? So trust your intuition, take risks. Don't let no be the final answer. You know, just say no right now, not right now, and do something else. You know, I don't know about a plan. It's so very different now. So very different. Mm-hmm. Be prepared as much as you can. You know, talk and share with other people who are working, share ideas, or, you know, and really take the risk of following your dream. You know, nobody else is going to do it for you. Nobody's going to open that door. You have to walk through it and ask for what you want.
That's the one I think for women, especially. I mean, now I think it's changing, but that's a difficult one because we don't necessarily can't find, I don't know if it's courage or no, I'm not good enough. Or, I have to tick all the boxes before I can ask. I think that's very important. Ask for what you want.
Yes.
You can say no.
Ask the universe.
And a no could be, and a no is halfway to maybe. That's what I was told as well. Yes.
Yeah.
Manifest it. Yeah.
Well, I do think, too, there is something, I mean, it sounds very woo-woo-ish, but I do think there's something to, at least for me and my experience, you have to see yourself doing it before you do it. It's like you have to see the building before you build it, kind of, or draw it. And that is really...
almost like a vision board.
Do you do vision boards? Or? Yeah. No. I don't do that. I'm too lazy.
That's a lot of cutting and pasting. A lot of blue tack.
Blue tack. Yes. Do you know what blue tack is?
I'm finding out. But you did one movie called I Want to Hold Your Hand, which I saw like 15 times. I just loved that. I just thought it was so much fun. And I got to work with Wendy Jo Sperber on a show I did. She was cast and she was just so wonderful. And you met her and I think it had a profound impact on your life.
Oh, yeah. Wendy was a little bit younger than me. And we just kindred spirits from the get-go. We just connected like we were old souls coming back into this life together again. And we had a ball making the movie. She had a cry. She's like, how do I cry? How do I do this? And I said, it's easy.
Oh, you taught her how to cry?
You know, and then she was just, she was a natural talent, really.
Yeah,
and
just so
an incredible human being. And we were really, really close friends. And of course, as you know, many years later, she had cancer and she first asked me if I would be a celebrity golfer and to raise money for this organization. I mean, I really had no idea what she was doing and what she had up her sleeve. And then finally in 2001, she said, well, it's opening and you have to come and you have to help me and you're going to be the creative program director. And I said, what's that? She said, well, you're into all that woo-woo stuff. So, you know, I mean, it was so creative and magical in another way. You know, we were creating this environment, this healing environment, and bringing in all these modalities that really no other organizations and certainly hospitals, nobody was doing it. But we kind of really, coming from a creative background, knew the value in healing with a lot of these modalities. So it was kind of like, you know, let's put on a show, you paint the scenery, I'll make the costumes. And, you know, the joke became, I said to Andy, here's the joke. I said, we used to be they're the woo-woo organization.
Oh, is that
over
what
there.
You referred to?
The
that?
Woo-woo. Yeah. And I said the go-to because we were the first and then everybody wanted to do what we were doing.
Have you found people have copied the WeSpark model and brought some of these things? Talk about WeSpark and how it's different from other places.
So when we opened, prior to WeSpark, there was the wellness community, and the wellness community offered support groups for cancer patients and anyone who was a hands-on caregiver, and that was it. Wendy said, having gone through cancer, that it didn't just affect her, it affected her children and her siblings and her parents, and she said, everyone needs support. So we're going to do this, and it's going to be open to anyone whose life is being emotionally affected by someone with cancer. And everyone said to her, no, you can't do it. You'll never. And this, what I loved about her is she never understood the word no. It was just meaningless to her, you know? And
like
so we opened 2001, and here it is 2023, and we've been serving people, thousands of people every year for free services.
It resonates for me for a very personal reason. I had cancer 8 years ago, and I found going through it, you can control yourself to the best of your ability, but what you can't do is affect any change on your family, your kids, your wife, parents, whatever it might be that are around you. There is actually, there's a similar organization in the UK that it's like a reach out program where you can go, you can talk to, they have therapists there, you can talk, but that's what it's limited to. And it is very, very good. But I've certainly, having gone through it, knowing that there are organizations out there that can help people, because I'm lucky, I survived it, I'm still here. But there are plenty of people that don't, or plenty of people that have it ongoing and it never goes away. And it is hard. It's a very, very hard thing to go through. And for you to do what you do, I cannot tell you, sitting from here, how magical and how giving that is, how selfless that is, because people don't realize the effect cancer has until they've actually been through it, either themselves or seen someone go through it. So I would like to say to you, you know, I'm going to raise a glass to you, because I think that's the most amazing thing to do.
Thank you.
I really mean that.
Thank you. Thank you.
I really mean that.
You know, my father had cancer many years. Oh, I think it was after I did RoboCop, and we didn't know what to do. I mean, it was just awful. I wish that we'd had something like that. And I'm glad that you had some support. In 2020, September, during the shutdown, I went for a mammogram because God knows we had nothing else to do. And, they said, oh, you know, we better do this and ultrasound. I thought, oh, I have dense breasts, big deal. And then they did a biopsy right then and there. I thought, oh, it's a cyst, big deal. And until the doctor said, okay, now we're going to mark it for surgery. I went, surgery? What are you talking about? And me? That can't be. I'm 70 years old. That's not possible. And certainly it's not only possible, but very common statistically for women over 65. Now, I call it my cancer escapade because it was, you know, stage one, early stage one, and it was just a lumpectomy and all of that. But when you hear that word malignant and you hear cancer and you hear invasive and words like that, and you're going, oh my God, in my body, how on earth did this happen? But I was so fortunate because I knew what to do.
Yeah, I've been around.
And I had Yeah, I had everything I
but
needed.
But you're okay now.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm totally fine like you. Totally yeah. fine, survivor and all. But having seen what so many people go through on what I had, it was so minor. But it does take a toll on other people. And the funny thing, it's not so funny, but it's funny to us. It's like every industry has its inside jokes. When you see a couple come in and you look at the person who looks one looks really good and the other one looks like a total train wreck. It's always the caregiver.
Because
they're so busy taking care of the patient and they're not taking care of themselves. And we just say, we'll take care of you and then you can take care of them, you know?
But it's so powerful to be able to offer that. And I suppose also from your perspective, seeing that transformation, being able to help someone, seeing them get their life back together again as the caregiver and maybe in that example. So again, it's phenomenal to see. It really is.
Thank you. It means a lot to me. It really does. And my friends thought, what are you doing? Because little by little, I stopped. Yeah, I pulled back on my career and they said, what are you doing? Don't you miss being creative? And I said, no, I'm getting to be really creative, creating this whole program map and also introducing other people to different forms of expressing their own creativity, you know, a lot of things. So anyway,
it's such real life as well.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And you know, the wonderful thing is, I think with any career that you have, there's always, I feel like at the core where you've achieved, whether it be greatness or just expertise, you want to give back, right? You want to like pay it forward. You want to, you know, help. Let me help you get there and inspire and change mindsets and hopes that we would create a domino effect and they will help each other and they will help each other. And I'm sure that's what I'm feeling that's where you are now in this life.
And well, it's true. And you know, when I wasn't even 50. I was in my mid-40s and I lost both my brothers 7 months apart. And they were 50 and 52. And it was after that, it's like I started looking at my work and it was almost like the universe planned it for me because it was when it all kind of came together because I just felt like what I was doing. It's like sitting on a set. There I was sitting on a set. And this is after the organization first opened. I'd just be sitting there, you know, in my little box waiting for them to call me. And I was thinking, I could be doing so much more, you know, and the magical feeling when someone comes in and they're just so frightened and so all, and then you start to see life. Their life coming back together. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they're not. Maybe they're not going to make it, but they're still coming because they feel so happy and feel safe and they're connected. So yes, at the end of the day, no matter what's going on, I can never go home and feel like I haven't done something that's of value. And I do think at some point in life, that is what we were meant to do, to bring, whether it's, you know, being a mentor and bringing the next group along or whatever it is. Yeah, we have to use what we have
and
to be.
And it fills you. It fills you.
It does. It's selfish. Very it selfish. Really I'm greedy for that
it?
Feeling.
I know, it is.
You
know? It is.
That's wonderful. Should we play a little game?
Yes.
How are we
talking? Are you open? Are you open to playing?
I'm going to play with great trepidation.
All right, so we have a game where it's a box of questions and they're broken in into different categories. So our guest, pick a card, read out the question, and then you answer, and then we will take alternates.
That's a lot of cards. Yeah, let me just grab this one.
It's a trick, Deb.
I want this one.
Okay, that one.
Let it manifest.
One. Yeah, exactly.
I don't want the others. I just want that one. Here you go.
Okay.
All right. So I hate this question.
Oh, no.
I wanted it. No. What's your secret success strategy? Keep going. You know, just keep going and trust your instincts. That's my secret success strategy. Don't take no for an answer.
Yeah. Mine would be, my dad had a saying that always stuck with me, which is, you only fail when you stop trying. Which was so powerful to me. And I think that you always reach that point. You go like, I don't know. And you go, no, I'm going to keep going. And I think that's important.
That's a fabulous.
Oh, that's a great one. For me, it would be trust your intuition. That is your North Star. I think a lot of us feel that our intuition, when fear comes in, it overrides us. But no, just get over the fear. But if it feels right, the feeling of things is where intuition comes from. So just do it.
Beautiful. I love that.
So when I was going through treatment, I used to watch films. That was my go out of my headspace and just go somewhere. And so one of the films I love, I love the Rocky franchise. I've always loved that. And the last one he did as Rocky was Rocky VI. And there's a scene in there where he's talking to his son, and there's a monologue. Okay. And this monologue I used to use to get my backside out of bed every day. And it's something along the lines of, it ain't about how hard you hit, it's about how hard you can get hit and how much you can take and keep moving forward, because that's how winning is done. And that has become my strategy for success. And success is a very ambiguous word, mm-hmm. but that's what I use every single day.
I love it. I love all of those. Thank you.
I know. Isn't it wonderful? And it's always so interesting when people answer these very deep questions, because it's your, I guess, where you are in life, right? Sure. And what's happening to you and what you've learned. And I love that you're giving back. I love that you're helping others, because I think if we all did that, the world would be a much better place. And you will be, your spirit. We forget that giving back and helping others and being kind, it actually feeds your spirit, and you can heal yourself from doing that kind of work.
Oh, yeah. I thank you for that. And you know, I think of all the magical, mysterious guides I've had along, the people that just sort of appear in your life, and they're there like your guiding light to the next step.
Right.
It's nice to think that I could possibly be that for someone else, you know.
Well, I can just tell you from experience, I have so many friends who've been helped there, and it's wonderful.
Thank you.
Aww.
Thank you. And your incredible wife has been so supportive and helped us a lot with fundraising with her talent.
Well, she loves you guys, so, yeah. And loves the charity. And it's always, I think it's, I shouldn't say this probably on camera, but it's always a great event. It's
really, oh, it is
I think
great
it's the
event.
Best. It's the best one of all the,
really?
The benefits she does. Oh, it's so much fun.
How do we get involved? So tell us a little bit about the organization. If people want to get involved, volunteer, or actually go, how do they go about that?
Just go to the website, okay. Which is wespark.org. It's a very user-friendly website, and you can see about the events and volunteering opportunities and donation opportunities. And, you know, we love meeting new people.
Are there any plans to open centers elsewhere, or have you?
You know, no. And we did have one up in Santa Clarita. It was sort of an ill-fated, ill-planned thing. But I'll tell you, the internet and COVID was a gift in a way, because I was always trying to figure out, how do we get to more people? And how do we get to the people who we already serve, who don't feel well today and they can't make it to their group, or they don't have a ride, or whatever it is. And so, you know, to have a lot of virtual programs and hybrid has really been fantastic. We have people coming to group from, I was talking to a lady a couple days ago in Massachusetts, and she says, I just love the organization. Wow. I said, well, happy we can help
that's
you.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Nancy, thank you so much for coming in today. This is just marvelous. And when we conceived this, you were the first person I thought of.
Oh my God, I'm so honored. Thank you. And, you know, anytime I can support you guys in what you're doing, because I love the conversation.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you for being part of it. Thank you for being on with us today.
Yes.
Really, really appreciate
and
it.
And thank you for helping others.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Join us every Monday for a new episode of Movies With. Next week's guest is the lead singer of the iconic band Berlin, Terry Nunn. Open and honest, our conversation will take your breath away. Please visit our website at nrjmediagroup.com to learn more.
Movies With is a weekly podcast produced and hosted by Norma Garcia, Rich Reed, and Jeff Sherman. Engineered and edited by Rich Evers. Graphic artist, Martin Eleben. Technical advisor, Tracy Williams. Production coordinator, Kiri Hardiman. Publicist, Josh Gershman. Social media advisor, Samantha Fox. Production assistants, Dan Waite and Alex Sherman.